750. No matter what you ride or drive, it's all about taking it outside. So get on your bed for a scooter and ride. This is Outdoors with Wheels with Lynn and Donnie. For best results, mix thoroughly with dirt. Add adrenaline, then shake really well. And now, Outdoors with Wheels. Here's Lynn and Donnie.
Welcome to the Outdoors with Wheels show. I'm Donnie Stewart.
And I'm Lynn Beckwith.
Some of our travels this week took us out to the Texas Hill Country, where we enjoyed a nice little ride around the Inks Lake area, even stopped and took a dip in the Devil's Waterhole.
Well, there was some beautiful pavement all around that area. And then, of course, we found a little bit of dirt, a couple of detours down to the water, and a nice hike to a waterfall that was pristine and very peaceful.
You know, I love how the upper hill country chain lakes are all granite instead of limestone rock features. That's not something I'm used to seeing.
Then we got to the really fun part and went over to Marble Falls, and specifically the Hidden Falls Adventure Park.
That's right. We were at the off-road playground for four-wheelers, UTVs, Jeeps, and of course, dirt bikes. Lynn and Mary were wanting to further their dirt riding skills a bit more, and we had scheduled an appointment with Brad Collins to come give us a bit more instruction.
Brad teaches a MSF-certified dirt bike class called IXL Dirt Bike Rider School. You'll enjoy his classes and expertise.
Yeah, Brad's been an instructor for a while now, and he's also a prominent figure on the Two Wheel Texan Internet Rider Forum. I've had the pleasure of seeing him conduct a number of classes over the years, and he's turned quite a few green riders into fairly competent dirt people.
Well, it really doesn't matter if you're planning to ride on the street or in the dirt. Brad's classes will give you skills you need to stay out of trouble, or if you ask Brad, it might even help you get into a little bit of trouble. By the way, we're going to hear more about the Two Wheel Texan Rider Forum later in this episode.
First, let's talk with Brad about the importance of learning proper dirt riding techniques, which we call them dirt riding techniques, but really this is just advanced motorcycle handling techniques over more extreme types of terrain. These techniques also work very good in bailing you out of trouble in dicey situations in the street as well. I advise every rider to learn these basic techniques.
So why don't we start with a little bit of your riding history, like you started the class with, because that's interesting.
Okay. I started in the early 60s, mid-60s. Buddy and I, we were stationed up in Washington. I was in the service in the military. In the evenings, the weekends, whenever we got on the beach, we rode the Hodaka Super Rat. It was a great bike, and we brought the boat around, and we wound up in Charleston, South Carolina. Well, in Charleston, we got really excited about running the motocross circuit. They had a really nice amateur motocross circuit. We geared up, and I bought my first motorcycle and started riding then, and people would come from miles around just because if I was racing, there was going to be a good crash. So, and, you know, we didn't know anything. No sponsor. 14-year-old kids were racing faster and harder than I was, but we had a good time. I rode that, and then I went back to school and I finished up my studies. Didn't ride for about 15 or 20 years, and I had the opportunity to buy a really nice street bike, a BMW R90/6, a 1974. And it was such a sweet bike. I probably put, I don't know, 100, 200,000 miles on that bike. I went everywhere, did everything you could possibly imagine. I finally traded it for some guy to fix the holes in my blacktop, but I ran it till it just, by gollies, I thought it was done. And then it sat in the chicken coop for quite a while. But in about 06, some buddies called me and said, let's go rent motorcycles and go ride. And I said, I don't do that anymore. And they said, yeah, let's go. So anyway, they talked me into it. And we went to the local Harley shop and rented three motorcycles. And the guy that was doing the rent says, I really need to see you guys ride before I let you go on the highway. And, you know, I still had my motorcycle endorsement on my license, but I hadn't been on a bike in a number of years. Rode around the parking lot, and he says, okay, guys. So these other two guys pulled up beside me, and I said, well, where are we going? And they didn't know. So I said, well, we'll go to Port Aransas. So we left Austin, rode down to Port Aransas, spent the night. I had a buddy that's got a boat down there, and we spent the night on the boat. And then the next day, we were riding along the beachfront. Nobody there. It was a cool morning. I was riding a Harley. One of the guys was riding a Buell Lightning. And I said, I'd like to ride that. And it broke the dry spell. I couldn't help it. That sucker would run a hole in the wind. And so as soon as I got back, I bought my Buell. Best motorcycle ever built. You can argue all you want, but I've got 80,000 miles on mine, and it still runs. I broke a belt and a kickstand. That's it.
In 80,000 miles.
In 80,000 miles.
And I've seen you ride. I know they were not easy miles.
No. One of them, I decided I should ride off-road, and I wadded it up pretty good. And then, I like to ride. So anyway, I got back into it. Well, the guy that rented us the bikes, he says, dang, he says, you know, you're not a bad rider and you're loud. Would you like to be a rider coach? And I said, well, yeah.
So you went from not riding for 10 years to being an instructor or getting ready to be an instructor?
Yes. Getting ready to be a Motorcycle Safety Foundation instructor is not instantaneous. I had to take the course, the basic course, then I had to shadow an instructor for 5 more classes. Then I went to San Marcos to take the state class. Then I went to Bangor, Maine to take Harley Davidson's Rider's Edge class before I could teach a class by myself. So it was relatively expensive because instructor classes cost a lot more than your basic rider courses. It was relatively expensive, but the return, I learned so much. I was a fair rider. I'm just going to say I was fair, but my gosh, the techniques and the exposure I got to riding really well.
Nice. Well, I've taken your class twice now, and I thought I learned a lot the first time, but I think I learned even more the second time.
And, like, I have students that come back 4, 5, 6 times, not because they're slow, but because they learn something or they find something new each time. Yes, I do. I'll hunt for something to expose them, a new technique or something to expose them to. But yes, it is always, always something new. And especially if you haven't been to a class in a while, you get lazy. You get really sloppy. You quit doing what's right. So you quit moving your head. In the dirt, we've got to put our head on a bobble. We've got to be bobblehead dolls and keep our head and eyes moving. You get lazy and complacent. So you really need somebody to walk around behind you for a few licks and maybe give you a little boot, something to pick your interest so you'll get your head up and start looking where you're going. Sometimes that's all it takes. Sometimes it's a new bike, and we need to work on the techniques that are applicable to that bike.
It's called a basic class, but you can customize it to people that have quite a bit of experience already.
According to the Motorcycle Safety Foundation curriculum, which I follow, they're all areas that we follow verbatim because the litigious society, we could get sued. There's certain things that, you know, we just can't do. The customization of it is like, well, take somebody like Donnie, who is an awesome rider, and for me to challenge him a little bit, rather than have him take 1, 2, 3 stabilizing steps to get his motorcycle running, which are moving, sometimes I can say, well, why don't you stand on the pegs for 2 seconds before you move? And what I'm doing there is I am trying to get him to practice balancing on the bike, because part of good riding in the dirt is the balance. It's like the 2-finger drill we did this morning. Is the bike needs to be balanced. But if you're on it, you need to be balanced too. So there are challenges that I have a little bit of leeway with. Yeah. But do we deviate from the curriculum because they're hot shoes? Not really. Not really. There's some challenges I can do for somebody that's a hot shoe, but a deviation from the basic course. No. There are other more advanced courses. The Motorcycle Safety Foundation has one more class after this one that's called Introduction to Trail Riding. And a prerequisite to that class is that you need to take the closed range exercise, which is what we did. Then we go out and do a victory lap or whatever, to learn how to put these techniques that we've learned into real life application. So the introduction to trail riding is what I do as an instructor. Is I go out, I set a course through this magnificent park that we ride in, and it's going to be all day. It's going to be, you know, 4 to 8 hours. Depending.
That is a long time on the trails. If you've never ridden a dirt bike, especially if you've never actually taken it out onto the trails, you use muscles that you didn't know you had. There's a stamina that you have to build up in order to ride for an hour, never mind for 4 hours or 8 hours.
When I was riding motocross in the 60s and early 70s, I never was competitive, and it was all amateur. And like I said, they come to see me crash. But anyway, it was great. But one of the things that came out during that time was that motocross was the most strenuous activity sport that man could be involved in at that time. And God, the way these guys are riding today, it's still got to be up there.
Yeah, it is not easy just to ride up a small hill with rock sliding. And when you see the motocross riders that are in these huge ruts and they're jumping jumps, and there's a lot of stress and strain on their body.
Gosh, I hate to say anything derogatory, but I will tell you that a lot of those guys have been busted up pretty bad, and they're still young, and you know, and it's not hurting them. Well, I'm not so young anymore. I just turned 70, and I can tell you that, yeah, it starts to hurt, and a good get-off is just, you know, you just don't bounce back like you used to. So I've toned down my riding I've toned it down a little bit, but yeah, it's still, you know, we still get out there, and I would say I'd like to let the wind blow through my hair, but that's not going to get it.
Well, Brad was taking his baseball cap off as he said that, so we could see where he got sunburned today.
Yeah. Oh, and the sunburn, yes, because there's nothing up there to protect it. I love to ride. Most of us do. What I like about this class, it's called a closed range exercise. It is not one you can get a license with. You will not get a free ride from a ticket with it. This is a class that you actually learn to ride the motorcycle. You don't sit there with your arms bent, your knees out on your up on your chest, and your feet on your highway pegs, and just cruise down the highway. We don't ride like that. Nothing wrong with that kind of riding, but we don't do that. We are up on the pegs, arms and knees bent, taking up the shock. We dance with the bike. We make it go where we want it to go. We're not going to let it pull us around.
Well, you started our class today with something that I thought was very pertinent. Many, many street riders don't take any classes, even if they take the basic MSF on the pavement. The skill level that you build when you ride in the dirt is so different. Years ago, I heard that if you want to ride in the street, you should ride in the dirt for 2 years first. And I would encourage anybody out there who's even contemplating street riding to at least come and take a class in the dirt and learn some of those skills before you get out there and maybe get in trouble and not know how to get out of it.
That's exactly right. Street techniques, they're fine, but they don't work well in the dirt. Dirt techniques work well everywhere. So you're adding tools to your toolkit so that if you get into a position to where you need to extricate yourself out of a jam, you're in too deep, you're into a corner too far, something is not right. A dirt technique may be what you need to pull you out. And you may need to know that. I tell my students straight up, being a good street rider will never make you a good dirt rider. Being a good dirt rider will positively make you a better street rider. And if for just one thing only, it's that we get used to getting our eyes up and looking where we're going and not being afraid to move the bike, to make the bike go where we want it to go.
Well, in both of the classes I've taken with you, there have been students that had no riding experience, not just a little riding experience, but we had a family in the first class that had two of the individuals had no riding experience. And I saw over the course of the morning and the afternoon, them turn into riders. They were riding down trails by the end of the day very proficiently. So it's a great investment of a day.
This not uncommon is the thing I like about the Motorcycle Foundation's curriculum. And which is what I use, is that it's stair step. And I can take any good MSF, Motorcycle Safety Foundation and rider coach can do this, is that we can stay on the curriculum and each step is a step up. By the time you get to step three, you're not thinking about step one. By the time you get to step five, you're not thinking about one, two, or three, because those steps you've already learned. You may not have mastered them, but you know them. And so as the day goes on, you just keep getting better and better and better. I see lots of people, lots and lots and lots of students that, gosh, it's just, and this is one of the reasons why I do this, is because you can actually see the light go on. It's just like turning on a switch, is that they finally understand, oh, if I pull the clutch in, it won't run away from me. You know, or the, oh, yeah, I'm grabbing that brake too hard. I don't have to grab it that hard. Oh, yeah, if I stand up and push on the tank with my outside knee, I can turn this sucker on a dime. But the light, it's like a flash. And even in this hot Texas daylight, it's like a flash, and you can see it. It's like Donnie walking with me today. Donnie was there, and I could see him when he recognized that transition had been made. And if you think it's something on the first day, the second day is fantastic. One of the things that I want to do, or I may try to do, is make this a two-day course. Is the first day will be all closed range exercise. I'll beat you up just like I did you guys. And then the second day, we'll spend the whole day in the park doing the introduction to trail ride. And the introduction to trail ride is kind of neat because I don't have a set piece that I have to do. I can take the drops, the drop-offs, the rock climbs, the river crossings, the mud holes that I have available. And we go to those and we stop and we talk about what needs to be done to get across it or to maneuver this obstacle, and then we do it. And then we go from that spot, we'll go to the next one and do that. That's kind of what I'd like to do, and I may try to incorporate it next year.
So we are actually out at Hidden Falls. It's a beautiful park, and it has been a rather sunny day today. And we're visiting with Brad Collins, and Brad has IXL Rider Dirt Bike School. And so you're a certified MSF instructor. And if someone is even considering riding a dirt bike, maybe they're not real sure, not real committed, they don't even have to bring their own bike.
No, I have 10 bikes. I try to have something that'll fit most people. If you have a bike, I want you to bring it so that I can see how it fits you, and we can talk about body geometry and how well you can ride it and why. Things that you may need to do to your bike to make it a better machine on the dirt. The pros and cons of the bike you ride. No one bike is going to do everything. That's why I have 10.
Well, you definitely have had a bike that would fit most anybody here today, and you're very generous to let us try all these bikes. Even if you're considering buying a new dirt bike, it's a great opportunity to come and try some different bikes and get good instruction and make a much more educated decision before you go pop the checkbook open.
Absolutely. The biggest mistake that moms and dads make, and as well as younger, inexperienced riders. My buddy Bob has got this bike, and I want one just like it. Well, Bob is, you know, he's 3'6", and you're 6'3", and it doesn't work. No, so, you know, you need, and Bob wants to ride around in little bitty circles, and you want to go and do the Transamerica Trail. Or you want to go to Colorado and ride in the Taylor Basin, or go to Montana and ride the Best of Montana 1000, or go to New Mexico and do the BDR. There's so many rides. So figure out what you want to do. Then we can figure out what kind of bike you want. Then we can figure out what size you need. And the size, I don't mean the engine size. I don't need 50 cc's, 250 cc's, 900 cc's. That is not, I have had 14-year-old girls on my 690 because their feet would reach the ground. 690. This is the meanest, it's one of the meanest motorcycles out there. It's 305 pounds and 75 horsepower. Well, I have done a little work to it, so it's up to 75 horsepower. And absolutely the easiest bike I have to ride. Is so forgiving.
So even if you are an accomplished rider, there's some skills you can learn at the IXL Rider Dirt Bike School, such as maneuvering your bike on a hill. You mentioned the two-finger exercise we did this morning, balancing your bike on two fingers. One of my big challenges is that my 360-pound, 650cc motorcycle scares the tar out of me when I drop it. And you've taught me today how to handle the bike in a way that I'm not quite as intimidated by it.
Well, yeah, and it's just like the guys that ride the big GSs, because I teach them too, the big 1,200cc BMWs that weigh 700 pounds or something. Yeah, knowing the right technique to pick it up, you can pick it up. Do I ride one? No. I don't want to push it. You know, I don't want to fight it all day. I like to ride a little quicker, and there are guys that ride them just fine. I just don't want to do that. And I'm sitting here looking at a brand new Africa Twin, which is an obvious, a beautiful bike. Would I own one? Nah. It's just not what I want to do. Is there anything wrong with the bike? Oh no, it's a fine machine. But it's not what I want to do. So that's why I ride some pretty powerful bikes that are built to perform, and I enjoy it. But it's just like, I also have the little Yamaha XT. Sweet bike. Well-balanced, well-behaved, good bike. I've got two small Hondas. Kawasaki, the guys in New Braunfels, Woods Family Fun Center.
Yeah, that's a really nice dealership. I've been in there.
Yeah, they sponsor me, and they give me two relatively new Kawasakis every couple of years. So I have two 140 Kawis that are just super bikes for a little bit smaller statured women and kids. And I can take kids down to age 6. Yeah, it's okay. Just don't expect them to be motocross racers at age 6 and a half.
So who has been your oldest student? And it better not be me.
No, it's not. I had a 74-year-old grandmother about 3 or 4 years ago. And she went through the whole class, and I kept saying, aren't you tired? Aren't you done? Of course, back then, I wasn't 70 yet. So, yeah, she was 74 then, and she wanted to learn how to ride the dirt bike, and so we did. We spent all day at it, and she did just fine.
Awesome, Grandma.
I wasn't going to say she did great, but she did just fine. This dual sport riding, or just getting out and trail riding, is so fun. Fun is not the right word. It's a whole lifestyle. Your whole demeanor, your whole appreciation of life changes when you go out. I go out and I go ride Montana with 25 or 30 of my closest friends, and it's so different. You're relaxed. You eat well. You tell dirty stories. You snort when you laugh. You know, so it's great. The girls go with us. You can do it on the cheap. There are some things, and that's what I talk about in my class, that going on the cheap is just the wrong way to go. You know, I'll buy pants that may cost $75 or $100. They last me a season, maybe two seasons. But I can go buy Climb that cost damn near $200, but they'll last me 6 years. Well, I've got a pair now that is 6 years old, and if I wasn't so fat, I could still wear them. But it's just some things that the economy, unless you know what you're looking for and what you're doing, you need somebody to help walk you through that. And my students all call me, hey, Brad, what about this? What about that? I don't have anybody sponsoring me. Climb doesn't sponsor me. KTM damn sure doesn't sponsor me. And I think I'm sending all their kids to college. The Kawasaki dealer in New Braunfels, he does give me a couple of bikes, for which I'm eternally grateful, because back when I first started, I had one motorcycle, mine. And then they fronted me two bikes. And so I was ready to get into business.
So if you are in the Austin area, if you are in New Braunfels, if you're in San Marcos, it is well worth the drive to go to Woods Family Fun in New Braunfels. In New Braunfels.
Yeah, and you know, some of the other guys that helped me out, I like Moto Orangutan, Wes. He's down on Woodruff in Austin. He understands. And it's like I had a student Wednesday. Blew his boot. He had a CD, which is a very expensive motorcycle boot. Blew it up, and he was leaving that next day to go on a big ride. And so I called Wes, and I said, Wes, I got a guy that needs a boot. How are you? And he says, I'll wait for him. And so he waited for this guy. And it's an hour and 20-minute drive from here. Waited for the guy to come in and get a new pair of boots so that he could do the ride. Wes has been real good to me.
the passion that you have and the joy that you find when your students learn and when that light comes on is very obvious. And I would believe that anybody, no matter what type of teacher they are, that is the true reward.
Oh, absolutely. I didn't realize that it was abnormal. I didn't realize that having somebody learn something that you're trying to teach them is a reward in itself until I started teaching motorcycle. And now, you know, and I've been doing it for a fairly long time, and it just never ceases to amaze me. You know, I put the guarantee on my class, you know, if you don't learn anything, don't pay me. Nobody's ever said no.
Well, no matter what you ride, no matter what your skill level, I would strongly recommend that you come and take Brad's class.
The great outdoors, a set of wheels, and you, the three, are destined to dance. Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
Was your car deep in water? Don't know what to do next? Call your Auto Mojo experts at Beckwith's Car Care and they can help you. Whether you just need advice or you need someone to service and repair the car and restore it to pre-flood condition, the top-notch mechanics at Beckwith's Car Care are here to help you and your family with all of your car care needs. Lynn from Auto Mojo and her team will work with all the insurance companies and can take care of everything that you need in just one stop. Call Lynn today, Beckwith's Car Care, 281-540-2000 or Beckwith's.
Does your car rattle or squeak, bump or thump, cough or wheeze, shimmy or shake? Call the experts. Call Freedom Automotive. Freedom Automotive has 30 years of customer service excellence and the trained staff to take care of your car, whatever the problem. Freedom Automotive in Stafford can do everything your car needs, from basic maintenance to high-tech repairs, and they also have a complete paint and body shop. For folks you can trust and for service you can depend on, visit Freedom Automotive, freedomauto.com, or call 281-499-4797. Freedom Automotive.
Welcome back to Outdoors with Wheels. I'm Lynn Beckwith.
And I'm Donnie Stewart.
On Tuesday evening, we watched the sun set over Lake Conroe while enjoying steak night with the Houston Jeep people. Now, some might argue that two wheels and four wheels struggle to exist on the same trails.
Well, I've seen plenty of examples where that's not the case. Certainly out in Colorado, the Jeeps and the bikes coexist just fine on the same trails and have a great time. Now, occasionally, the bikes want to get on their own single track, and the Jeeps go after some ledges that the bikes just can't handle. But by and large, we do coexist just fine out there together. And I know out at my place, the Wilderness Rider Ranch up in the Ozarks, we really count on those Jeeps to keep the trails open in the summer. Without them, the grass and the weeds and stuff would grow up to the point you just couldn't even see where you're going. The bikes just simply don't have enough footprint to keep that whole logging road clear. At the end of the day, we're all off-roaders and we're all looking for the same adventure out there.
So join us now as we visit with Isabel, Ron, and Randy with the Houston Jeep people.
Yeah, I think Donnie saw this weekend a Jeep that was climbing a waterfall at Hidden Falls, didn't you?
Well, up to 2 years.
Yeah, I saw a Jeep that was having quite a bit of trouble climbing the waterfalls at Hidden Falls.
Well, 2 years ago, they didn't have water at Hidden Falls. You know, they called it that falls, and I was like, why? There's no water here. And then after all these rains.
Hidden Falls is in Marble Falls, Texas.
Yeah, it's Marble Falls, Texas, but Hidden Falls is the name of the park. What is your policy on making new trails?
Right here, right now, I don't have so many that I couldn't have a few more.
Well, that's what I'm asking. Right. Because we do have guys that come with chainsaws, you know.
Right. I would like to have some more single track for sure.
Well, you know, we get somewhere like on the side of a mountain or something, and you know, you look at your logging road and go, man, that looks like that'd be more fun, and cut a new trail. Your water up there, is it swim? You know, can they swim in it and
oh,
stuff like
clear.
That?
Yeah.
Well,
but it's seasonal.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a human.
That's a person.
That's a human. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a path. Is it a path that goes up and then comes through and keeps going?
It's not one that you can four-wheel on, this particular one, but there are others.
Somebody might try.
this group would try. I've been around this group. They almost made me tip a brand new Jeep before I'd paid for it.
But you didn't.
I did not, thanks to you. Your roof touched the ground on your Jeep. Oh my goodness. We're at
Hidden Falls.
It is so slippery and so rockery.
Yes.
The trail we were on was wet and bogged.
Okay, so when it first happened, I started reaching for stuff and unconsciously tried to reach for the steering wheel. He's like, don't touch anything. So, you know, I didn't even want to breathe after that point.
How cool is that? You got to send me that video.
Yeah, I will. And then after we got out of the Jeep, everybody was like, oh my God, I bet you were cursing him out. I said, nope. All I can think of is, how are we going to get a wrecker up here? And what am I going to tell my insurance?
Uh-huh. But yeah, well, you know, the problem was you slowed down.
Well, he was driving.
You need to go faster and then you don't tip.
Yeah.
Just bounce.
It was a big boulder that he caught. That's why it did that.
Yeah,
huge. Yeah.
Well, I was really surprised about how really rocky the terrain was at Hidden Falls. I've been there twice now on two wheels, not four.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it'd be harder or easier on four.
I don't know. Yeah. I really wouldn't know.
I think four is harder. You wouldn't go on Hidden Falls with a two wheel?
Nope. No, it's some of the the only good thing about a two wheel instead of four is when you get to the end of some of those, you could turn around and go back.
Change your mind instead of being in a line of Jeep.
Change your mind. It's just some of those trails are so washed out, you can't get a Jeep out of them once you get to the end. They're just so bad now, unless you got a super modified, you can't climb out of them. Rick's Jeep, when I brought his up there, I broke a step and a control arm trying to get out of one trail that we've been in her Jeep gone down. And 2 years later, it...
So is it all the rain that's come lately that has just washed everything out?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. Don't go by the maps because the trail rates, they said that none of them are right. So a two can be a five or a six.
You'll find that at Barnwell, too.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. Oh, no, Barnwell
You're
is not
about
as bad.
Hidden Falls, but
Barnwell's not as bad.
I went there and a lot of what was supposed to be Category 2 motorcycle trails ended up having knee-high ledges.
Well, see, now I haven't been on any of the motorcycle trails, and that's the one thing about Barnwell. They have separate trails.
Yeah.
They have UTV and, you know, four-wheelers and then motorcycle trails.
Right.
And I've tried to take a Jeep down a couple motorcycle trails.
I tried to take my motorcycle on your Jeep trails, too. It didn't work out real well.
Yeah, you spent a lot of time laying down.
The motorcycle took a nap on me.
Yeah, no, but Hidden Falls, you know, we went 1 year and in my Jeep, and my Jeep's pretty rugged. My Jeep's a bunch of different, it's like 11, 12 different lifts. I took the parts that work off of different lifts and built my Jeep.
Built a hybrid.
It's not one brand. The control arms are one brand, the springs are one brand, the shackle, everything. But I've installing all this stuff, I've seen what works on other people's and what doesn't. So I cut to the chase. I just got the good stuff from all of them.
There you go.
And my TJ, I've had people tell me my TJ will go places. They've got $40,000, $50,000 buggies, and I can go where they can't. But the Hidden Falls, I went this last time, 2 years ago, before I blew my Jeep up. I couldn't get through half the stuff anymore. You know, I couldn't get out of it, couldn't climb it. You know, it was several of them. The 4 foot wall.
Yeah.
Get up and it's 4 foot vertical wall.
A lot of erosion since I first started riding there compared to modern day.
Loose rock, the trail loose rock.
Mm-hmm.
I went down it at night, and that's supposed to be a one way up only.
Right.
And I went down it, and a spot that used to be just a gradual drop was a 9 foot drop, and I went off it.
Oh, buddy.
We hit and stood straight up and down. The kid that was with me, I slammed my arm on him and told him lean back, and we both leaned back, and the Jeep fell back down backwards. I mean,
yeah.
And
that's a dream.
We hit it and I just floored it the whole way.
Yeah,
that was a fun ride.
First gear, it's all right. Second gear, hang on tight.
the great outdoors, a set of wheels, and you, the three, are destined to dance. Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
Finding out what's wrong with your vehicle is simple and convenient at Beckwith's Car Care. Their ASC-certified technicians and professionally trained advisors will help you understand your vehicle and keep it safe and dependable. For everything from oil changes to a new engine, from tire rotations to a check engine light, visit Beckwith's Car Care. Call 281-446-4000. They're on FM 1960, just east of Highway 59. 281-446-4000. Proud sponsor and co-host of the Auto Mojo Show on AM 950 KPRC.
What do customers say about Freedom Automotive?
Great service, as always.
Fast and friendly, good work, and good people.
We love Freedom Automotive. They provide the best combination of expertise, customer service, trust, and a fair price.
Whatever your car needs, Freedom Automotive is trained and equipped to help you and has a proven record of great customer service and quality repairs for 30 years. Book an appointment for your service at freedomauto.com or call 281-499-4797. That's 281-499-4797.
We have screamed through the valley where the Nishnabotna flows, through the mud and crud and cornfields where the marijuana grows, across the railroad tracks of Persia, down the hills and up the dale, past CJ5 with a four-wheel drive and Smokey on my tail.
Two wheels or four, it doesn't matter. It's all about enjoying the outdoors. Get your tires dirty with Lynn and Donnie as Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.
Welcome back. You've been listening to the Outdoors with Wheels show. I'm Donnie Stewart.
And I'm Lynn Beckwith.
You know, so many of the places we visit and the people we see out there are all made possible by the information we get off of the rider forums and the internet.
Well, it doesn't matter if you're planning a trip around the world or around the block. There's going to be someone that you can connect with that will give you the information that you need to plan for your trip, help you out along the way when you have trouble, and most importantly, develop a friendship with, and they're the kind of friendships that last for life.
Very well said. Our next guest put together one of the most prominent rider forums in the state, possibly in the country. It's been a great resource for everything from where to go get a good piece of pie to how to rebuild an obscure motorcycle engine, as well as a wonderful avenue for meeting lots and lots of other folks who share the passions you do.
Well, Scott Friday is going to tell us all about how he kind of fell into this magic forum he's created and how it has reached literally around the world.
The reason we drug you away from your family is because we're in absolute awe of what you've created online. The motorcycle community is always so supportive of each other, and you've given us all a forum that we're able to support each other, to communicate with each other, to sell and buy and trade with each other, but mostly to develop friendships with each other.
That was pretty much the goal. Everything else is just kind of a bonus, I guess. You know, I got a late start in motorcycle riding. I think I was 33 when I got my first bike, and that was because friends were pressuring me to get a bike because they had bike. You know, I finally got enough of my student loans paid off that I could afford to get a bike, and so I started out with my first bike, and I got it bad, and then my wife decided she needed to ride and didn't get it as bad, but, you know, over the course of, I think, 3 years, 4 years before we started having kids, she rode probably 40, 50,000 miles. I was averaging about 25,000 miles a year and going through a set of tires every 6 to 8 weeks.
Not many riders can say they've ridden that much in a year or as much as your wife did in just a couple of years before she started raising your family.
Yeah, and during that time, we were going to rallies. Honda Sport Touring Association had rallies out in the hill country. We'd go to those. Kind of accidentally met up with some Triumph guys out in North Carolina because I saw a red bike and thought it was a VFR and chased them down, and turned out they were Sprint STs. And they were from Dallas, and they were doing a Triumph rally, so we hooked up with them for the rally. And, you know, just meeting people like that, I just started collecting a lot of email addresses, and it got to be very cumbersome to have to email people and deal with individual responses back when you're trying to organize rides, trips, whatever. And at that time, I was organizing rides for friends, their friends. Sometimes I charged, sometimes not. And so I set up the Backroad Motorcycle Tours, and that was around 2001, 2002, I think. And I did that. About the time that really started to get going, I had also started the forum, which was in February of 2003, and had no idea what I was doing. I just downloaded some free software, unzipped the files, put them on a server that charged me $5 a month. Kind of got it set up and then sent out a bunch of emails to everybody saying, hey, come check out this website. And about an hour later, the server crashed. And so I got 400 emails saying, you know, what website? So
that's what you get for $5 a month.
Yeah, exactly. And that would set the tone for maybe the next 6-8 months. I was on a forum, I think it's Cycle Forum. Somebody in Austin I met turned me onto that forum, and I was complaining about my web server issues. And this guy named Rocket Cowboy, his real name was Charlie, he's from Dallas. He was like, hey, I'll help you out. I got my own private servers and my own data center, and I'll give you whatever you need for $10 a month. You can call me 24/7. And he knew a better version of software to use for the forum. I was using something called PHPBB or something. And he got me onto this vBulletin, which is what I still use. And it was, you had to pay for that one. It was a license. But it was a much better software, and he knew how to use it. So he really held my hand, got me set up with a new server, because the site was just going down all the time, just crashing all the time. It was a real pain. He helped me through a couple upgrades to new versions of the software. And really, that first year, if it weren't for him, I probably would have just walked away, got tired of it. But, you know, he persisted, I persisted. And I remember one day when we got to 100 users, I was really excited and ran in the other room, got my wife, was like, hey, check it out, we got 100 users. You know, yeah. Now we're over 19,000.
19,000 users. And I know that when I log on, I see a whole lot of that 19,000 on at the same time.
Yeah. You know, typically what will happen is you'll get somebody that gets on the forum. They're real excited for 6 months to a year. They're real active. And then they just kind of fade away. And then some of them will come back. I've had a couple of them just recently. They're like, hey, I've been gone for 5 years. Can you help me figure out what my password is and get back on the forum? You know, that kind of stuff. And then we get the diehards that got on the forum like from day one and have been on the forum every single day for the last 13 years, I think it's been now. You know, there's some guys that were the original members. You know, each member gets like a user ID and I'm number one. But there's some of the guys that are like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 are still on the site.
Well, that's quite a testament to the popularity of the site and to the value of the site, because I know when I've gone on and posted a question, it's usually pretty darn quick that there's somebody out there. Well, there's usually about 6 somebodies out there with different answers, but lots of information.
Well, you know, you go to some websites and you post a newbie question, and you'll get the people that'll jump down your throat and they'll tell you to use the search feature or Google or, you know, whatever, and they can be pretty ugly. Real early on, I clamped down on that kind of behavior and just, you know, I didn't come up with a lot of complicated rules for the website. Basically, it's like, you know, you don't have free speech because this is not a state-run website. It's private. It's like coming in my living room. So I expect you to behave like you're sitting in my living room and treat people like you're in my living room. And if you aren't polite, you'll be asked to leave. And, you know, I had a couple people early on that I really had to fight with them on that. You know, not to be ugly, not to cuss at people, not to get into the big flame wars that you see on a lot of websites. But after people finally started getting the idea, the other users kind of started policing that. And I really didn't have to spend that much time cracking down on people. There have been some users over the years that have been problematic. Yeah, people that just can't take a hint when they got 100 people telling them the same thing. And, you know, out of that 19,000, I think in the last 13 years, I've banned maybe 5 people, flat out banned them.
That's not very many.
No. Now, I've had probably another 10 or 15 that, you know, got fed up with me because they didn't like the way I ran the website and they'd left. And I'm like, you know, the internet's a big place, lots of websites, go start your own. You know, if you don't like the way I run it here, go start your own. So I don't know if any of them ever did, but,
you know, most people, as they embark upon a new business, a new project, they don't think a lot about it. They just jump right into it. And I know that's part of what you did. But the beauty of it is that it is your project and you're king.
You know, I had to explain that in the off-topic section a while back. We had a big brouhaha where a bunch of people were fighting. And some of the people are like, you know, you need to bring the hammer down on these guys. And, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, I could do that. But if you make a habit of doing that, most people don't like that. You know, you don't like to do something to have someone come down on you. So, you know, it's like, okay, you got the power, but you got to give people a reason to want to change what they're doing, not threaten them, not, you know, browbeat them or whatever. You know, I've had quite a few members on the website that used to be problem members. I was getting lots and lots of complaints from other users about them. And finally, I just contacted them and said, hey, look, you know, you've got this one area of the website where people love what you do. You're hosting maintenance days, you're helping people, you know, you're hosting campouts. People love what you're doing. But then you come over here to this other part of the website, and people hate you. They want me to ban you. They want me to delete your account. You know, so really, you need to decide what you want to be known for. Do you want to be known as someone who helps to build up the community, brings people together, you know, encourages other people to help? Or do you want to be the guy that just irritates everybody, tears down the community, makes people quit coming to the website because they get sick of seeing your stuff? And most of the time, that's worked really well. I mean, I've had some guys that I had to ban them from the off-topic section, but they're still welcome to the rest of the site. But most of the guys usually would take that to heart, and girls, because there's been a few girls that were problems, you know, very strong personalities that didn't like to be told what they could and couldn't do. But most of them, they agreed, and they've gone on, and now they do stuff that a lot of people like.
Well, you've managed to create a community and a sense of community. I mean, it's a very friendly place. I'm a newbie, and when I post, I don't feel like anybody's going to jump down my throat. It's a very friendly environment, as most motorcycle communities are.
Well, I have three kids now. You know, and they were, I think the first one was born a year after I started the website, year and a half after I started the website, right after I spent a lot of money on a motorcycle. And I pretty much early on decided there's a lot of websites you can go to that are really crass. There's lots of just people being really ugly to each other, lots of vulgarity, just, you know, really explicit stuff. And not because of any particular moral objection to all that. I just didn't want my site to be that way. I wanted it to be a little more family friendly. I wanted my kids to be able to look over my shoulder and not have to go, oh, don't look at that, you know, that kind of stuff. To have them read people's ride reports and not have to worry about what they're going to see. Most people have kind of taken that to heart. There, like I said, there have been a few people that didn't like that, and they go to some other forums and post their stuff there. And, you know, so that's worked out pretty well.
So what is the most unique thread that you've run across in these last 13 years of hosting Two-Wheeled Texans?
Well, you know, motorcycles and guns tend to go together for some reason. So there's the gun porn thread in the off-topic section where people, for whatever reason, want to show pictures of their guns. Mine were all lost in an accident. But that thread, it's got thousands and thousands of replies, and I don't know how many views. There's the doom thread, which someone started in 2006, right about the time everything was starting to melt down economically, and that thread has gone on for years, and that's kind of become just a catch-all, talk about the economy, crazy stuff, and it's still always on the first page of the off-topic section after all these years. It's been running for 10 years. Probably the most unique one was someone did a review of the Bandit 1250 the year it came out. That was their fuel-injected model when they stepped up from the 1200. And he did a really, really good review. And all of a sudden, we started getting people from all over the world. I mean, places I hadn't even heard of, couldn't find on a map, you know, and they started showing up on the website and signing up. And it got to the point where we finally had to start what was called the Bandit Mega Thread, where all these people were posting in this one thread, and eventually we had to just create a Bandit subforum. So I don't normally make bike-specific, model-specific forums because I don't want people to go sit in their little corner and not use the rest of the website. But it got to the point, just from a management perspective, that we had to do that. So now we've got 300 or 400 users that ride these Bandits, and they're from Moscow, Japan, New Zealand. We got a bunch of Australians, pretty much everywhere except Antarctica. Every country I've ever heard of. It's amazing.
Well, if Bridgestone would come out with ice tires, we'd be in good shape in Antarctica, too.
Yeah, that would be great. You know, that thread pulls people in from literally everywhere. And that's kind of neat, because it's kind of like, hey, they'll post in the introduction section, and we're like, well, post up your ride report. Show us pictures from where you're at. People want to see that, because people here go on trips to other places, and it'd be neat to see it from a rider's perspective. So we try to get them to share that kind of stuff. We had one guy in Australia who rode with his son, and they were dual sport riders, and he posted some really, really good ride reports. He just had an ongoing thread that he would just add to whenever he'd go out and ride, and that became really popular, and he actually became a forum supporter, and, you know, sending me $25 a month to help keep the forum running.
Well, and that's an important part of this message. There's a lot of cost that goes into almost anything, any project that you create, and certainly running a forum, even though it's online and everybody thinks the internet is free, it's not, and there's a lot of time that you've devoted to this as well.
Well, when I originally started, you know, the guy Charlie I was telling you about, he only charged me like $10 a month. And if I needed a new hard drive or more hard drive space, he just took care of all that. Because it really wasn't that big a deal when the forum was only a few hundred people. About the time I think we got to about 4,000 or 5,000 users, I think it was back around 2007, he had sent me a message saying, hey, I'm changing jobs. I got to close all this down. You need to find a new place to host your website. which was kind of a bummer, but at the end I knew kind of what I was doing. It wasn't costing me a whole lot of money, but there was another guy on the forum who owned a whole data center in downtown Dallas, another dual sport rider, and he's like, oh yeah, sure, I'll hook you up. So he set me up with a pretty good deal, got me on a machine. There's another forum just like mine, but it's bike specific. He was on the same machine, so the two of us were sharing this machine. You know, some websites might have, or some machines may have a couple thousand websites on them. We weren't doing that. I was getting ready to go on a trip to Mexico, got my bike ready and everything, and about 2 weeks before the trip, the server just started croaking. It was dying bad. I knew that was coming, so I'd already dropped $4,000 on my own server. And another guy on the website was a server admin for a living, so I had the server shipped to his house in Temple, and then I didn't get to do the trip to Mexico because I had to drive to Temple, pick up the server, drive to Dallas, get it in the data center, get it set up, get everything running again. And then I was out $4,000 that I didn't have. The amazing thing was I posted on the forum, you know, what I'd done, and I let people know that I was going to do it ahead of time. And probably within about, I think that was October, and I went on a ride to Big Bend with the Texas Adventure Ride guys with Richard, and that was in February. And he took some donations at the banquet there, and I think it was another $400 or $500 I got at that banquet, and that was enough to pay off the entire server with all the donations I'd already gotten before then. So, you know, 5-6 months I had $4,000 worth of donations to cover the server. I've never done anything like that since.
Well, it's another statement of community.
Yeah. Now the interesting thing is you know, I've talked to my pastor about this. Churches have the same problem. People show up, they want to use what's available, and they just assume somebody else is going to pay for it. So you may have a congregation of 1,000 people coming to a church, but you might only have a few hundred that actually support the church on any kind of a regular basis. I have over 19,000 members on the website. At any given moment, maybe 140 to 150 of them are actually active supporters of the website.
Wow.
Which is less than 1%. Much less than 1%. Yeah. I didn't go into this to make a lot of money. You know, as long as I get my expenses covered, I'm fine with people coming to the website and just using it as they want and not feeling like they have to pay. Yeah, I've had people try to talk me into doing a membership-only type deal, but, you know, my thought is if you do that, a lot of people just aren't going to come to the site anymore. I have seen other sites that have done that, and it has killed the sites, and they go away, and people don't even know about them. But the people that do donate, you know, most of them, it's just a $5 a month automatic payment through PayPal, so they don't even have to think about it. But you get 100 people sending you $5 a month, that adds up. You know, I do very, very limited advertising. I think I have 4, maybe 5 people that actually pay me a monthly fee to run a banner. And that's only like $50 a month. I don't charge hundreds of dollars. And then I've got some guys like the guy Richard I was talking about that have their own sub forums where he can organize his events, post about his events. And that's like $25 a month. And he's the moderator of that forum. He can start new threads, but nobody else can. So he has a little bit of control over that. And then I've got some sponsors, you know, guys like Motorcycles Unlimited and used to be the BMW dealership in Austin, Robert Kroll and his wife. They not only sent me money for a banner, but they would send me money every year just to support the site because his wife got on the site and really loved it. There's a lot of husband wife riders on, like you guys, on the site, which is one of the things I like about it is, you know, you'll see girls, you go to some rides, and you'll see dads and daughters riding. It's really neat.
We were surprised at the number of families we see, especially at dirt tracks, motocross track.
We have one guy, Ralph, I can't remember his last name. He's with the Christian Motorcycle Association. He showed up a few years ago, and he started organizing family dirt campout weekends at some of the different tracks, like Sterling Ranch down in Willis, New Waverly, Blue Bonnet MX, which is kind of over by Caldwell, Somerville, that area. And, you know, we'd go to those. I'd take my 3 kids. They all have their dirt bikes, and there'd be other families that show up, kids the same age as my kids, and they'd all be on dirt bikes, and they'd camp out. Ralph would usually have a tent set up with some music going and big giant pot of beans and drinks and make sure there was water for everybody and, you know, stuff like that. Those are the things that I had in mind when I created the website. I wasn't thinking, okay, how can I make a lot of money off this, you know, which a lot of websites do, which is understandable. But I was thinking more, how can I create an environment where people can come together, learn about riding if they don't know about riding, learn about where to ride if they don't know where to ride, and just make friends. Because, I mean, I'll tell you what, I know it's true with any hobby, but I have made friends riding motorcycles that are lifetime friends that, you know, you share some crazy adventure on the side of a mountain somewhere, and you're going to be friends for a long time.
Thanks, Scott, for sharing a story or two with us. I just want to say again how your efforts have profoundly changed motorcycle riding for us all.
Well, you can find Two-Wheeled Texans at TWTEX.com. Consider being a forum supporter. So please help out. A very small contribution goes a long way. TWTEX.com. And we've just scratched the surface with Scott, and you will certainly be hearing more from him in future episodes of Outdoors with Wheels.
And next week, we'll hear a little more from the Houston Jeep people, too. Well, once again, that about wraps it up for this morning. I hope you guys are starting to get your gear together and get your trailers loaded. It's time to go out and have some fun.
Happy riding, everybody.
That's right. Happy off-roading, happy four-wheeling, whatever you're going to do. By all means, get out there and do it.
The Great Outdoors, a set of wheels, and you, the three, are destined to dance. Outdoors with Wheels continues on KPRC 950.